You're listening to The 21st. I'm Gwen Macsai. Later this hour, we'll hear from researchers working in the field of EMDR therapy. That stands for eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. It's a form of treatment for people who've suffered trauma. It's been around since the 1980s, and I became aware of it back in March 2013 when I packed up my car with two of my children and drove from Evanston, Illinois to Washington, D.C. to visit friends over spring break. Since I'd lived there for almost 9 years, I had a lot of people to see. Top of that list was one of my best friends, Alice, who I'd known for 25 years. We arranged to meet for coffee on the morning of March 26th at 9 a.m. As usual, I arrived early and waited. When she wasn't there at 9, I didn't really think anything of it. But at 9:15, I was a little worried and texting, "So, are you running late?" And by 9:30, I was texting, "I'm worried. Call me ASAP." No call came. I got in the car to leave, and I called her house on the off chance she was home. A stranger answered. It was her cousin, who told me that Alice had been run over by a van and was in the hospital. I drove to Baltimore right away, where Alice was in surgery to stabilize her pelvis, which was shattered. In the coming weeks and months, Alice would undergo another surgery, 8 hours long, intensive rehab, and a year lost to recovery and various therapies. She, her husband, and two children even had to move into an apartment because there were too many stairs in her house. It was a long, long year. But I am thrilled to be able to tell you that now Alice is absolutely fine. If you met her, you would never know she'd been through such a trauma. And that is true due to the miracles of modern medicine, of course, but also to EMDR that has a remarkable success rate for people with PTSD. Whether the PTSD stems from battle, trauma, adverse childhood events, or any other difficulty. The therapy has to do with retraining the brain to make the active emotional trigger of a trauma become a passive memory by using sensory stimulation. I invited Alice to come to the show today to tell us more about her experience with EMDR, and she's on the line. Alice, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, Gwen. It's strange to hear that story from your side.
I know. And since we've worked together a lot before, but we've never interviewed one another, so also a little strange.
True.
Does the accident seem longer than 7 years ago to you now? Because I can't believe it's already been 7 years.
You know, it depends on the day. Sometimes it seems it was another lifetime ago. And a lot of times, though, it's very present in my life and, feels like it was last year. So go figure.
Yeah. So I'm trying to remember exactly, where were you in your recovery when you heard about EMDR, and how did you hear about it?
I had vaguely heard of it before, but didn't really know what it was. And when I got out of the hospital, which was 7 weeks after the accident, I was in a wheelchair. And so, as you said in your introduction, my family had moved to an apartment, and a friend came to take me out for lunch. And we got to the corner, and she was going to help wheel me across the street. And so there was not a red, there was like a flashing yellow light. So we were just waiting for an opportunity to cross. And every time a car went by, apparently I was flinching. And she finally turned to me and said, "Wow, you seem really traumatized just, being around a car. Maybe you should consider this therapy that I did a number of years ago." And so we went to lunch, and she told me about her experience with it. And she actually had her son treated for anxiety, a very small kid. I think he was 12, 11 years old, something like that. And they had found it tremendously successful. So she passed along the name of her EMDR therapist, and I went about it. Although I have to say, I was in just regular therapy at the time and before the accident, and both my therapist and my doctor were clearly really skeptical about it. They knew what it was and were skeptical, but I really needed help, and so I just plowed on.
And how would you describe your experience with PTSD before the therapy?
That is very hard to talk about. It's something I almost have never talked about, but I was actually stayed conscious through the accident. And it was right across the street from my house, as you know, and a neighbor was coming around the corner and I was walking my dog. And I thought he was slowing, waiting for me to finish crossing the corner. And when I realized the car was basically upon me, I tried to dive to the side and to get back out of the street. And then he drove over me and in a minivan. And so there was this moment where I was still awake, where I was conscious that the back tires were going to go over me next. And that was the moment that I just kept reliving in my head before I went to EMDR.
That was my good friend, Alice Winkler, talking about a traumatic car accident she was involved in 7 years ago. After the break, we'll hear about Alice's experience with EMDR and hear from a clinical psychologist who's used EMDR therapy with her patients. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Gwen Macsai. We're talking about a form of therapy to help people who've suffered from trauma. It's called EMDR, which stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. I've been speaking with my friend Alice, who used the therapy to help recover from painful memories after being run over by a van and airlifted to the hospital. This was on a morning when we were supposed to meet, as I was visiting her from Illinois. Later this hour, we'll hear from a psychologist who's trained in the therapy to learn more about why researchers think it helps patients. But first, we wanted to get back to Alice's story. So what was your experience with the EMDR therapy like?
Well, it sounds so kooky.
I know, right.
I mean, the therapist was a very experienced person. She's actually retired since from doing the therapy, but she was a professor of psychology at GW, and in her private practice, she did this. And so I went to see her, and she explained as best as she could what we were going to do. And then she gave me a choice of the sensory input that I could have. And the traditional one, which is where the name EMDR came from, was eye movement. So there's rectangular box, and it sits more or less on a tripod, and there are a series of little lights that, you know, faced me, and the lights would sort of run from left to right, like little almost Christmas bulbs size lights, and they would go from right to left. And then I also had the choice of an auditory input. I chose not to do that basically because, like you, I worked in radio and didn't want to mix it up with audio. I just stayed away from that. And then the third choice was some kind of touch sensor where they would, I think, hook your fingers up to something so you'd feel a buzzing. But anyway, I chose the light. And then the therapist brought me through a series of exercises where she would, you know, it's sort of like what you think of as exposure therapy. You know, she would have me recall the incident, but I would do that while I was watching these lights go back and forth. So I had to follow the lights and then at the same time in my head go to that, you know, really traumatic moment that was the PTSD moment. And then we would, you know, I would do that for some amount of time, then we'd stop and we'd talk through it. And then she'd say, let's start, you know, we're going to start again, pick that up and just let your mind go wherever it wants. And my mind went to some pretty interesting places during that. I remember at one point, you know, when we'd stop and she'd say, what were you thinking about? And I was, you know, I started with the moment under the car and then somehow imagined that I had, you know, this sort of bionic shield over my back that had kept me from dying under the car. And can't really remember too many specific other thoughts, but that one felt very powerful. It felt, and this was only maybe my second or third visit with her, where I felt like somehow mentally that I had developed some shield or some superhuman powers that I had survived this terrible thing. And I actually didn't do it that many times. I continued to see her for a little while, you know, a couple months, but I didn't actually do the light movement part of it, the eye movement part of it for very long. But the effect was so dramatic, so quickly. I mean, I had a, you know, pretty good experience with traditional psychotherapy. And this was just, you know, there was no sort of long tail to it. It was, you know, I was having that that sort of PTSD memory over and over of being under the car. And then I did this thing a couple of times and it really shifted quickly, which is, you know, when you have a trauma, that's really what you're looking for.
How did the difference manifest itself? Was it sort of an everyday life just got better, or was it specific? I mean, obviously it was specific to the accident, but how did things differ after that?
Well, it's interesting. I remember Sylvia, the therapist, explaining to me that you could think of the therapy as metabolizing the experience so that it would become a memory. In other words, I was re-experiencing it, the accident, over and over. And so it was, I couldn't handle it, right? It was like I was back under the car every time. And so what she meant by metabolizing it was, you know, if you imagine digesting it, that, you know, when you've experienced something normally, it very quickly becomes a memory. You don't forget it, but you don't re-experience it. But with PTSD, what happens is you keep re-experiencing it and you have all of the body sensations that go along with experience. You know, your heart's racing, or you have an adrenaline rush, or you're, you know, sobbing, or the things that you experience when you're really in the middle of experiencing something. And when you remember it, it can be very powerful, but it doesn't have all those, you know, other physical, biological components that go with that. And I went back to my therapist and my doctor and said, this is what it did. You know, I know you were skeptical, but you were wrong.
I was just about to ask you if you went back to them.
I did, both of them. I told them, if you ever have a patient with another trauma, just know that at least for me, and for a lot of people who've done it, it's a very powerful thing.
Yes, and I also just have to say that you're one of the most grounded and skeptical people I know. So when
yes,
you...
I am not woo woo about alternative
anything.
Treatments.
So
that is true.
So yeah, and in fact, I had kind of heard of it before you, but when you told me that it was helpful, that gave it a lot more weight to me.
I remember the therapist telling me, you know, that this will, of course, anyone who's had a trauma would like to think that they could forget it, or that it could, that it would recede into the background. And so I remember her saying, you know, like, that's not going to happen. this therapy isn't going to make that happen. You know, this accident will always be part of your story. But, you know, what the therapy will do is help, will help do just that, turn it into, you know, part of your story and not part of your everyday experience.
Well, Al, thank you so much for being willing to talk about this and to tell your story and to be on the show. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for asking me, Gwen. It's not easy to talk about, but happy if it helps somebody else.
That was Alice Winkler recalling her experience with EMDR therapy after a traumatic car accident and injury. Now I'd like to welcome another guest. Louise Maxfield is a clinical psychologist and founding editor-in-chief of the Journal of EMDR Practice and Research. She was trained in EMDR in 1993 and has been using it with her clients since. She also worked with Francine Shapiro, who pioneered the therapy. Louise is on the phone with us now from London, Ontario, Canada, where I understand it is also very snowy right now, like much of Illinois, and she's here to answer some of our questions. Welcome to the 21st, Dr. Maxfield.
Thank you very much, Gail.
I have so many questions, but I'm just going to jump right in. Do we know what's happening in the brain during the therapy that allows people to, as Alice said, metabolize the memory of a traumatic event?
Yes. Well, there is some evidence now showing that there is a reduction in the activity in the limbic system and in the reactivity of the amygdala, and an increase in activity in the frontal lobes of the brain and the more cognitive areas. And so there's a very noticeable change that happens in the brain with the successful treatment.
And so we know that it's successful. We can see that in the brain. Do we know why it works?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think we probably don't necessarily really know why any psychotherapy is effective. There's been some dismantling studies with EMDR looking at some of the effects of eye movements in particular. And we found that eye movements make memories less vivid and less emotional, and that they also help to people to recall other aspects of memories, make more associations. They're also relaxing. So there's quite a bit of power in eye movements, and we think that might be part of the reason why EMDR has been found to be such an efficacious treatment.
That's so interesting to me. And do we know what kind of trauma it works best on, or has it been successful for lots of different traumas, categories of trauma and problem?
It's very successful with all kinds of trauma, from things like motor vehicle accidents like Alice had, and military combat, sexual violence, childhood abuse, disasters. What we do know is that for a one-time trauma such as what Alice went through, it tends to be very rapid, just two or three sessions, and the trauma becomes just an old memory. But people who've had really extensive trauma that affected the way they lived their life, that requires more lengthy treatment.
That's so interesting that it can work so quickly. How you worked with Dr. Shapiro, who was the pioneer of the therapy. Do you know how it was discovered that this kind of sensory stimulation can help patients?
Well, it's kind of a unique thing. She was walking in the park one day and she was thinking about something that was bothering her, and as she was walking, all of a sudden, she noticed that her emotional had really dissipated, and she thought, what's going on? And then she realized that she'd been moving her eyes rapidly back and forth. And so she thought, well, maybe there's something to do with eye movement that's making this memory be less this powerful. And so she began experimenting with people. She found that other people weren't able to move their eyes spontaneously like she had. And so she developed a technique where she held her hand up with two fingers raised and moved her hand back and forth in front of people and got them to move their eyes following her fingers. And so she began experimenting and then developed the therapy, and it became quite a far more standardized procedure over time as people reported back what they were experiencing and using. She taught it to other therapists. So now it's a standardized 8-phase procedure that addresses both the past memories, current triggers, and future fears.
Wow. We have a lot to owe that walk in the park, I guess.
I know, we do.
So I think, you know, to as Alice mentioned, her psychotherapist and her doctor both were skeptical. And I think that it might seem hard to believe that such a simple seeming mechanism can be so effective in treating such deeply disturbing traumatic memories. Also, as Alice mentioned again, it does sound a little woo-woo. And I'm wondering if EMDR has entered the mainstream and how much skepticism you face again amongst other therapists, doctors, or the public.
Well, yes, it really has entered the mainstream now. And it's recognized in the treatment guidelines all around the world, for example, by the International Society of Traumatic Stress Studies and the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, the American Psychiatric Association, the World Health Organization. However, there are people who are skeptical. And this really, when it first originated, people were very skeptical about the eye movements. They said, well, this is crazy. Like, you know, is this just some kind of weird placebo or hypnosis? And then research was done showing that it wasn't any of those things. But psychotherapy sometimes can be political, right? And people don't always want to look at the evidence that would challenge their own position. And some people just aren't informed to know that it has now such a strong research base.
And speaking of research, you know, sometimes it feels like we know an awful lot about the brain, but other times it feels like neuroscience is really in its infancy. And I'm just wondering if EMDR has unlocked more understanding about the brain, its processes, or set research going in a new direction.
Well, yes, actually, I think probably the first studies on the brain and psychotherapy were EMDR studies because people were curious about that. And now some other treatments are also using neurobiological studies and fMRIs and so forth to try to really understand what goes on in the brain. But it's complex because therapy is complex. And we don't necessarily really know other than that we can see there's a shift in the way that people think and feel following successful treatment.
And I'm wondering, you know, it is kind of new, relatively speaking. And do we know, for instance, if the effects of the therapy are lifelong or if people might need a tweak now and then? I'm not sure how extensively it's been studied.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's been studied very extensively. There's more than 30 randomized controlled trials showing that it's effective. And in these trials, EMDR is compared to other treatments that are effective, like some of the cognitive behavioral therapies, and also to treatment as usual and waitlist and on placebos. So it tends to show to be the very same as the other effective treatments, but far superior, so significantly superior to waitlist and treatment as usual. And the effects have been found to be maintained over long periods of time with follow-ups up to 3 years in some cases. The effects are not just specific to the memory sometimes, although that's usually what's looked at, but people will often describe a transformation of their sense of identity in themselves in terms of the process. So where Alice talked about feeling like a superwoman, some people might take that into their life and feel more efficacious or have more of a sense of agency or groundedness in themselves following treatment. So the effects tend to generalize greatly in terms of the person's life and their own sense of self.
That's fascinating. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Maxfield. That was clinical psychologist Louise Maxfield. She's a founding editor-in-chief of Journal of EMDR Practice and Research. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.